from the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Wild Michigan, I'm Duran Martinez. Very happy to have you here. Very happy to have our friends at Not Just Guns back with us as they have been. We're going on 3 years with Not Just Guns. Very happy to have those guys there, Mike Green and everybody over at Not Just Guns. A phenomenal job getting you the firearms you need, not what they want to sell you. And if you find something that you have to have on their auction, so be it. NotJustGuns.com is the website to go to. And you can visit that through our website, wildmichiganradio.com. You can also visit Conquest Sense via our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Pick up the podcast there, because this is one of those shows you're definitely going to want to download, or, you know, make sure you listen to on the radio. Go back and download if you missed any of this, because I've got Brian Anderson, the Tick Terminator, joining me right now. It's been a couple of years. Brian, very happy to have you back, and this is conversation that the everyday gardener, the hiker, the bird watcher, the angler, the turkey hunter in particular right about now, because we've got seasons starting up coming at the end of April, needs to hear. Welcome back, sir. How are you?
Always good to be here. Yeah, it's been several years we've been doing this now. I feel like I'm talking to an old friend now. You know, it's a lot of fun talking ticks, man.
It is. I hate them. And, you know, right. You know, we've had several methods that we have learned over the course of time during the 15 years of this show. We have learned that ticks, when they bite, they have an anesthetic that they place on you before they burrow that saw blade into your body. And I hope you're not eating breakfast right now, but it's true. I mean, that's why, unlike mosquitoes, you know, I mean, mosquitoes, you feel that. Ticks, you do not, because they have devised this master plan that, hey, I've got this chemical, I'm going to just a little bit, and you'll never know I'm here.
That's right. God gave them that special little thing just so they could be sneaky, and it's like a little stealth bomber, you know? He also gave them a little liquid, you know, that works in the wintertime. It's like antifreeze, so they don't get frozen to death, which I wish they would, you know, but they hunker down in a leaf litter. And when snow comes, it's a wonderful insulator. So that's where they spend their winters in our parts of the country, you know. So then they come; they're about ready to come out now, man. They're gonna be hungry, you know.
I was gonna say, is that temperature? What is that magic temperature that's gonna get them out and about, stretching all eight of those little legs? Are they arachnids, or are they just insects?
Okay, they're all eight legs. They're part of the spider family. They're arachnids. That's right. Yep. I tell people between 32 and 40 is when they, you know, start getting, you know, out of their slumber, if you want to call it that. You know, but in the wintertime, I mean, let's say you have a thaw in January, February, when it's been, you know, like zero, you get like 50 on occasion for a day or two, they can come out then.
Wow.
On occasion, yeah, they do.
So they're going to be out now.
They're going to be coming out for good.
Right, yeah.
They'll be coming out for good now.
Yeah. They're out now. So, I mean, look, and it's not just like low-lying ground. They have abilities to reach places that you would never think about.
Yep. They're going to typically be in brush, you know, like grass, vegetation. And this time of year, the vegetation is just starting to grow up, okay? And, I mean, you're talking even mushroom hunters, you know, out there, shed hunters, you know, this spring. They remember that they are going to be hunted also while they are hunting other things, you know? The ticks will be hunting them. And this time of year, the ticks that were born last summer, now they're going to be, this will be their first spring. And if they got Lyme disease last summer from their first host, which is typically a white-footed mouse, they're going to be the size of a poppy seed right now when they come out. And I mean, they can be at that size, they could be on your shoelaces and you can't even hardly see them. But if they got Lyme last summer, you know, from the first host, they're going to have for the rest of their life. They don't have to be a full-blown, full-grown adult in order to be a problem. The size of a poppy seed could be a major problem. That's why I tell people protection is so important, you know, so important.
Now, we're speaking with the Tick Terminator, Brian Anderson. He's up in Ironwood, Michigan, up in our Upper Peninsula. And now, at what point in your life did you really become angry and unhappy and just want to be that guy that brings the information to people about, you know, tick awareness?
First of all, correction, it's Iron Mountain, not Iron Wood.
Iron Mountain.
But anyways,
You know what? I tried not to say it, and I said it anyway. Thank you.
We got three irons, Iron Wood, Iron River, and an Iron Mountain. And Iron River, just an hour from us, is where our famous gold medalist from the state here won it in snowboard. I'm so happy for him, you know. Nick Bumgarner. Anyways, 10 years ago was when I really started to get, you know, interested in this even more. I had interest since I was a little kid. But my wife just hates them. Of course, like any normal human. And I started looking into it, and then I had a friend almost die from Lyme disease, and I started looking into prevention because I'm all about prevention. And then I bumped into this one product I'd never heard of before, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, permethrin is really got me going. I said, I got to tell people about this. So I did some radio shows, you know, and some little outdoor TV shows. Segments on them and start telling people about it. And I never dreamed I'd be doing quite what I'm doing now, you know, all those years ago, but it's evolved into that. And now I work with companies that have outdoor workers and help supply them with knowledge, you know, safety directors at, you know, like power companies. Mm-hmm. And, so they can protect their people out there. Cause you don't want to get Lyme disease, you know? So, it's fun. I can't believe I, you know, could do this. I'm the Tick Terminator. I mean, how crazy is that, you know?
Well, it's a good gig if you can get it, I'm thinking, because you get to come on radio shows and talk about this stuff. And, you know, like we said, this applies to everybody. If you're going outdoors, it applies to you.
Right. I'm the only one in the country that does this even. I tell people it's a God-given mission. Only he's the one that could figure out, you know, a unique thing like this. You got to have a guy a little crazy, a little half weird, and have a strange interest in ticks, you know? And then if people go on my website, it's hilarious. When you look at my logo, it's a tick in the shape of a hand grenade. I mean, the guy who did my logo was genius, you know? It's a war out there, you know? It's a battle out there, you know?
It is. I am actually looking at it right now. LimeTickBugHub.com is where you can find, you can search Tick Terminator also. It'll take you right to Brian Anderson's website. We'll put a link up there on our website too, because it's very important. And we got a couple of minutes here, Brian. And you said you've got a poem you want to share, and I figure at this point we can do it right now as we get ready to get into the meat of this in the next segment.
Okay. The poem goes like this. I hate them little suckers. I want to terminate them all. So I do a permethrin and love to watch them fall. From head to toe I spray the stuff, my shoes, socks, clothes, and hats, because it works on more than ticks, like skeeters, chiggers, and even gnats. So I ask you if you're listening to keep away from Lyme, get started with permethrin, and now is the perfect time.
Absolutely, Brian Anderson. That is awesome. Oh my gosh. Not only does this guy have an awesome website with all the tick and Lyme info, the repellents like permethrin, he's got videos. You can contact him, find out more about it. But we're going to talk more with you in the next segment because we want to find out, you know, how we can apply this permethrin, where we can get it. And I'm going to tell you right now, my good friend Russ Bartell swears by it because it did not interrupt his bear hunt up in Canada here a couple of years ago at all. He had no problems with the olfactory system that a bear has. It did not bother it, did not scare it away, got up close and personal and got his bear. So there is your testament, minus Russ. That's just coming from him. But he'll swear by the permethrin as well, and we'll talk about that, talk about how we can get it from you and get it into our clothes and, you know, make us all safe as we hit the woods out there with this warmer weather. And it's all being brought to you by our friends at Not Just Guns, Cedar Street at 127 in Mason. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. We'll be right back.
time you take a sip in this smoky atmosphere.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Little Tick music from Brad Paisley helping us out because we are talking with the Tick Terminator, Brian Anderson, up in Iron Mountain, Michigan. I want to get that straight. And he is the Tick Terminator, and we are in fully in tick season. With this warm-up, we've got them coming out of the ground, stretching all eight of their little legs, sharpening up those those little, there's a name for them, and I already forgot it because it was a word that something tomes. Whatever it is, they're going to stick you with it. They're going to grind it in there. It's going to stay in your body. And this is why, Brian, please explain why you never try and pull a tick out yourself, because of how that little needle with the serrated edges is shaped.
Well, I tell people I have a little stuff tick that I use when I give presentations. And they've never seen it. They think I'm crazy. Of course, they're right. But anyways, the best way to take a tick off, you got to remember this. When you have a tick stuck to you, the last thing you want to do is make it mad, or you don't want to tick off a tick, because if you take it off and in the process of making them mad, they're more apt to puke the bad stuff in you, which you don't want. So you also want to do tick checks like every day during tick season and when you've been in tick environment. And make sure that you don't have any on you. But if you do have one on you, the best way to take one off is with a fine tip tweezers. Grab it right at the very base of the skin and just spray it up. Okay. If there's a little bit left in your skin, don't worry about it. You know, it'll come out in a couple days. You know, naturally, wash it off with some rubbing alcohol or soap and water, whatever. But then really monitor that bite also. If you have any problems, any kind of bad reaction, if you have achy joints, flu-like symptoms, a bullseye rash, anything like that out of the ordinary, you need to see a physician within like several days or a week. You don't want to put it off, because a lot of times a physician will look at that and he'll say, hey, because of your symptoms there, I'm going to put you on an antibiotic. Mm-hmm. So to avoid anything possible down the road. So they're being ahead of time there, because you don't want to wait 6 months and then, because then it's really bad then, but do it right in the beginning. Early treatment, early detection, early treatment is the absolute key to doing that. So hopefully that helps people too. You don't want to mess around with a possibility of that. Just because you have one, it doesn't mean it's the end of the world.
Right.
But if it has a bad reaction, that's what you really got to watch for.
Brian Anderson, our guest here. And Brian, that can have long-term health effects as well.
Oh, terrible. Lyme disease is just awful, and that's just one of them. I mean, you can have babesiosis, ehrlichiosis, tularemia, Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Southeast part of the country, they have a thing called Alpha-Gal syndrome, where they get allergic to red meat. Think about that, hunters.
I've heard
can't
of that.
Can't eat meat anymore.
Yeah, I've heard of that. No, terrible. I'll take the zero on that one. Thank you very much. Brian Anderson, our guest. His website is limetickbughub.com. We'll throw a link up on our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Brian, let's talk about permethrin here. Again, the importance of that for hunters is it's absolutely odorless.
Correct. When it's dry, that's why I tell people, put it on, let's say, the day before, or at least let it dry in your clothes for several hours, and then it's odorless. I mean, I use it on my deer hunting clothes in November, because we never know if November is going to be November 15th, if it's going to be, 50 degrees, 60 degrees, or zero, so I got to be prepared. So hunters, and odor is huge, any kind of hunting out there. So yeah, it is definitely odorless when it dries, and it's clear. You can't see it. You can't feel it. Doesn't bother us at all, but the little ticks and stuff like that, it drives them nuts.
Now you sell permethrin. You sell it in a concentrate that we can mix ourselves and spray, which economically I think is better than buying the permethrin treated clothing.
Yeah, that's different. I like to spray it on myself because, everybody likes control. And permethrin treated clothing works fine, no problem at all with it. But this stuff here is, when you put it on, for sure you did it.
Right. And you're not limited.
That's what I like about
You're not limited to that specific clothing to go outdoors either.
No. And spraying it on your shoes. I mean, because shoes don't come with it. And shoes are very important because sometimes that's where they get on first, in your socks. So, I mean, the concentrate that I use and sell on the website is the most economical permethrin you can get in the country. It is. And we're the only ones that have it. So it's very, very unique, and cut your permethrin cost literally in half because, you know, we're not shipping water. We're just shipping a concentrate with a bottle, and you just ship, you know, make it up at home. So it works out great that way.
That's fantastic. Brian Anderson is our guest here on Wild Michigan. Brian, and for those of you, if you're catching this in the morning, early in the morning, you're having breakfast, sorry. But nothing will drive you faster to want to get permethrin than to maybe, you know, you're laying down, you're taking a nap. All of a sudden you feel something crawling up the back of your neck. You grab a hold of it and it's a tick. That happened to me. Believe me, my skin is still crawling. And why is it, Brian, we're so afraid of something so damn small, aside from the obvious with Lyme disease and whatnot?
Well, yeah, just because of that, and you never know. Nobody likes anything crawling on them, you know. I have to feel bad that when I talk to people, they say, oh, I'm getting crawly, Brian, just listening to you talk, you know what I mean? And it kind of gives you the willies, you know, but it's kind of funny. But, yeah, I mean, I let me tell you, I was watching a black fly. It landed on my thigh a couple of years ago on my jeans that were treated with permethrin, and it was entertainment for me because it starts dancing around literally – doing the hot feet syndrome. It was wondering, what did I just land on here? I couldn't understand it, you know, and eventually flew off because it drove itself so crazy, you know, because it feels like an electric grid, the little permethrin molecules in your clothes. And that's the same thing with ticks. A lot of times ticks, if they're on you for a minute crawling up, you know, your pants and stuff like that, a lot of times they will do them in and they're pretty much useless after several minutes on you. And a lot of times it will kill them as long as repelling them too. So it's some really great stuff that doesn't bother us at all. You never put it on your skin. I mean, because our skin just dissipates it after about 15 minutes and it's useless.
Oh, okay.
But permethrin is for clothes and gear, yeah. DEET is great for your skin.
Real quickly, what eats ticks? I mean, I've heard opossums eat a lot of them, but anything else? Find them tasty? Ants?
Ants, praying mantis, you know, spiders. Turkeys like to eat ticks, you know, guinea hens, chickens. But possums like to eat them too. Possums, I mean, possums are like cats because they groom themselves, you know, where a dog does not groom themselves. So possums lay back and, you know, after they're going through the grass and all, because they lay back and they say, oh, look at that little brown spot there on my belly. It must be chocolate, you know. So they eat thousands of them, you know. So they love them. I always encourage people to let possums go.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Brian Anderson, thanks so much for Tick Talk. Again, his website is limetickbughub.com. Get your permethrin there and get all the education you want about ticks. Thank you, Brian. Appreciate you joining us here.
Thanks a lot. Yep.
It's Wild Michigan. More Tick Talk on the podcast at wildmichiganradio.com.
To everyone that has served this great country, keeping us free to enjoy the great outdoors, thank you. From Duran Martinez and Team Wild Michigan.
I'm just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Very happy to have you here. Being brought to you by our friends at Conquest Scents, Davidson, Michigan, makers of the wonderful VS1 and, of course, Evercom, Scents in a Stick. And thanks again to Brian Anderson, the Tick Terminator, for joining us here talking about permethrin. By all means, check out his website, limetickbughub.com. There is a link right on the front page of our website, wildmichiganradio.com, that will lead you right to him. He is in Ironwood, Michigan, and it literally... very passionate about ticks and their eradication, at least your safety in the woods. Right now, our good friend Tom Nelson, the American Archer, joins us here via the telephone. Of course, the American Archer television show on the Outdoor Channel for almost as long as I've been in radio, which is great and still accessible. Tom, how are you, buddy?
Good, Grant. Good to be with you today.
Good to have you here. And you know, I was reading, I got to give credit to Field & Stream for this article. It made me think about how important March is to whitetail deer hunters. Now, you know, you think, why? Because, you know, you don't have to adjust your stands. You don't have to do much of anything. You know, you can probably get your trail cameras out again to see what the spring will bring and maybe into the summer, but also shed hunting and checking out food plots.
Oh, absolutely. And I agree 100% with that statement about how important March is. I rely on the month of March more so than the month of September, you know, a month before bow season starts, as far as scouting's concerned, you know, going into new areas that I normally wouldn't, as far as bedding areas to look, see what's going on. Everything right now, here in early March, mid-March, late March, it doesn't matter when, here in Michigan in March, things look just like they did back in November when the leaves were down and all the foliage was gone. And so scrapes, rubs, runways, they all show up really well. They're very defined right now. So if there's ever a time you should be out doing some scouting, as far as if you're looking for new stand locations or, again, looking for old scrapes or scrape lines, rub lines, or venturing into bedding areas looking for sheds, March is the month.
You know, and a lot of us think, you know, there's really, for deer hunters anyway, there's not a lot going on. And, man, that really just encapsulates a whole season right there, just by saying that March is extremely important.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're a shed hunter, which I am and my wife is, I mean, we're avid shed hunters. And this is when you want to be out there before the porcupines and squirrels and mice have gnawed away at them, or competition has been out there walking through your woods looking to gather up any dropped antlers, but they show up so well. You know, everything's dead and brown out there, and you see one of those white antlers sticking out. You know, they're relatively easy to find now. The grass hasn't grown up around them. So this is the time. And, you know, and Durant, not even a month ago, I saw a buck that was still carrying his antlers on his head. I would surmise by now they've probably come off, but, you know, A lot of bucks with our mild winter in most areas here in Michigan, a lot of bucks carry their antlers longer. But again, right now is when you want to get out there shed hunting, and it's just great fun. And talk about satisfaction, boy, finding them is, you know, it's very rewarding.
Tom Nelson, host of the American Archer, joins us here on Wild Michigan. Tom, I kind of liken them to morel hunting. It's like you look for them and you get frustrated, you can't find one, then you find one. And then all of a sudden they kind of pop up if they're around.
Yes. Oh, that's so true. I'll use last year as an example. Our first outing, I shouldn't say that, it was our second, because we jumped the gun. There was still some snow on the ground. And Beth and I got out there and we spent a whole day, probably 10 hours looking, and we were too early. I mean, again, there's snow covering up most of the ground, but we were anxious to go. But our second outie, it was a Saturday, and I remember vividly we were out. We didn't find a doggone thing when we broke for lunch. We'd been out there just since good daylight, nothing. We got back out that afternoon, just a little different area, and it was like you said, it was like morel hunting. All of a sudden, here's one. We found five sheds in 2 hours, you know.
So wow.
Just because you're not finding them in this spot or that spot, you know, don't give up. And it's always surprising where you find them. I mean, one we were going across a chisel-plowed field walking to the woods, and Beth spotted it from probably 50 yards away sticking out. And, you know, and I'm like, what the heck? You know, just a buck going cross-country you know, you wouldn't think of spending much time in a chisel plow field looking for sheds, but there it was.
Yeah, you know, and I find it fascinating, too, that it's kind of like, you know, if you've got the trail cam footage, if you've got the photos, you know, it's either, oh, cool, this one made it throughout, you know, through the winter and through the season, or I don't remember this one being anywhere near me.
Yeah, and that's true. That's one thing that'll happen with, you know, when you find sheds too, you'll look and go, gosh, I don't remember this buck or whatever. But you have to keep in mind that a lot of these bucks, where they winter, where they're, you know, there's food sources there or cover, there's a reason they're in there all winter, and it might not be their home territory, their home range, but it's a place where they know they have security and a food source. So they could be from 5 miles away but they're in your area now. So you got to consider that when you find sheds. It might not be one of your local bucks, but he was there at one time.
Yeah, you know, it's got to be exciting to be able to just put those pieces of the puzzle together, because we go through this transitional period, if you're a bow hunter only, from like November 14th or 15th through the early part of December. And then if it's so cold you can't go out, then you got through January, February, and you're wondering, did that buck make it? You know, is it still there? Mm. I mean, and it's got to be some kind of relief to some guys out there and girls.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, when you get those trail cam photos, like you said, if you're monitoring your deer after gun season, and we do, we usually leave our cameras out through the middle of January. Usually we take them down by then. But it's always so exciting when you look and, you know, it's January 2nd and there's a nice buck on camera and you're like a survivor, you know, and it gets you pumped up and encourages you for, you know, possibilities for the following year. So, yeah, it's fantastic when you get a nice buck on camera, or even young ones. You know, you say, okay, these bucks made it, and, you know, and you can actually, you know, log them in. You know, okay, we got 4 year-and-a-half-old bucks that made it through on our place or on the property we hunt. And as I said, really gives you something to look forward to for the upcoming season.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. I love thinking about it, because, you know, I guess I really hadn't given it much thought unless I was out getting ready for turkey season, which we'll be talking about in the next segment, because we got a little bit of a late start coming up on turkey season this year towards the end of April. Right now, though, leftover licenses are on sale at the DNR website or at your local retailer. So you can make sure you get your license for the upcoming season, which I will be doing. I've not done that yet, Tom, but I will be doing that, because truly turkey season is my favorite time of year to hunt in Michigan. For some reason, it's just really kind of taken over everything for me.
Yeah, well, that's funny you should say that, Durant, because I have a good friend of mine who's an avid hunter, and we had a discussion here lately about the upcoming turkey season, and he made a very bold statement. He said, I would give up deer hunting if I had a choice between hunting deer and hunting turkeys. I would give up deer hunting before I would turkey hunting. And I, you know, was taken aback a little bit. I'm like, what? He said, nope. He said, I absolutely love turkey hunting, the calling aspect of it, the challenge. And he bow hunts them like I do. And he said, I just, to me, he said, it's miniature elk hunting. And he said, well, that's a very bold statement to make, because I like turkey hunting too, but I can't imagine giving up my deer season to just hunt turkeys. But that's what he said, so I'm going to hold him to his word. But again, that shows how passionate a lot of our Michigan hunters are about hunting that big bird. You know, they look forward to it like deer season. So it's exciting, especially, you know, you have a lot of times there's, besides fishing, there's, and morel mushroom hunting, there's, well, not a lot to look forward to in the spring. So
right.
You draw that turkey tag, here we go, you're out there hunting again.
All right, we're gonna talk more about that here in a couple of minutes. You're listening to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Appreciate you joining us here on the Michigan Talk Network. We're gonna talk turkey, talk ticks, talk turkey. Tom Nelson next on Wild Michigan.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Hey, up in the backwoods, down in the holler. Old boy's feeling like a dog on a collar. Keeping that chain pulled tight. Waiting on Saturday night.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Very happy to have you here. And real quickly, before we go on, thanking our friends at Not Just Guns, also Conquest Sense. Want to thank our listeners in, dig this, Pennsylvania, California, Wisconsin, and South Carolina. Those are the top 4 states, aside from Michigan, that are picking up the podcast via our website, wildmichiganradio.com. So all you folks in all the other states that listen to this show, I am beyond humbled, and thank you for taking the time out to listen to us ramble about what goes on, because it's not just limited to what happens here in Michigan. That's just the name of the show. What we get applies to about everybody in the country. The tactics are pretty much the same because the animals are pretty much the same. terrain may be different, but again, you know, the basics are what we've always talked about, maybe in depth a little bit. But again, if you lose me, you're going to lose a lot more people. So we just try and keep it to the point and have fun doing it. And we by far have the best guests of any outdoor radio show anywhere. And I swear to that. My good friend Tom Nelson is definitely one of them. I have learned so much in the 15 years of doing this show from Tom and all the other guests. And Tom, we were talking off air about turkey hunting. And I say this every time I bring up the season, that to me it is the most exciting season here in Michigan. But it's kind of like the mother-in-law going off the cliff in your new Cadillac season, because it's the excitement, everything's there, and it's over. You know, it's like the build-up and it's over. You know, the happiness and the sadness are within seconds of each other.
And, you know, there's always the possibility of taking others out there and introducing them to the sport, you know, and you sitting with them doing the calling, because, you know, it, like elk hunting, turkey hunting to me is all about the calling, you know, the calling a bird, the response, you know, whether he's going to come in, if he comes in, and you know, the sheer adrenaline rush that bird, you hear that drumming and out he comes strutting at 20 yards, and you know, and you go like, everything worked, there he is, and this, you know, the accomplishment that you feel when you get that bird in there close. And there's days that you just like want to pull the hair out of your head when you're turkey hunting. There's days when it works and you go, man, this is, you know, it's like magic, and that bird comes in. So you're right, it is great as far as sheer excitement. That's why we love it.
Absolutely. And calling for somebody else, believe me, is just as exciting as it is you doing the hunting yourself. So, again, it's a great point, Tom. And I'm glad you brought that up, because it is true, especially when you get somebody new out there. The excitement is just amazing. Now, you also mentioned that bow hunting for turkey can possibly extend your season a little bit.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. We talked about that on the break, and, you know, I'll use myself as a perfect example. When I first started turkey hunting, like everyone, I started out with a shotgun, and it got so, and please, not bragging, I was just really fortunate. I had a few years where the first day I was connecting, and it was bittersweet, as you had mentioned earlier. You got a bird in the hand, but here in Michigan with the one turkey limit, you're done. And you're like, geez, you know, my season lasted an hour, or my season lasted one day. And so I elected to the following year to start hunting with my bow. And that did extend my season, sometimes by weeks. But I enjoyed every day out there. So and talk about rewarding. Boy, you know, hammering a gobbler with your bow at 12 yards or 10 yards. Oh, my gosh, what an adrenaline rush. And, you know, and if you don't get one, he hangs up. He's, you know, within shotgun range, but not a good shot with your bow. Again, the satisfaction of calling the bird in, and you know what? You live to hunt another day. So it definitely has extended my bow season, turkey season-wise. That's for doggone sure.
You know, and that, I mean, look, getting out in the woods as much as possible is always what we preach here, to get outdoors, enjoy yourself, enjoy this great state we live in. But we want you to be successful as well. And for somebody going out bow hunting for the first time, Tom, let's talk about shot placement, because that is important with these birds.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, first, right off the bat, if you're hunting with a gun, make sure you know how your gun patterns at, you know, 40 yards and 50 yards or versus 20, and what it's capable of doing, so you know your limitations. And the same can be said for a bow. You know, when you're shooting a turkey with a bow, the head can be a very tiny target if you're going to try to head shoot one. And I usually advise hunters to aim, you know, try a body shot. And a turkey's kill area, you know, you dissect one, autopsy one after the kill, you got a kill area about the size of your fist. And you put that bird out there at 20 yards or 25 yards, and he's strutting and breaking strut and moving around. It can be, you know, an iffy shot. I set my decoys 5-6 yards in front of my my blind. I want them right up and personal, you know, close. And I usually, I'm not afraid to shoot them face on. I aim right at their beard, where it protrudes out of the chest. It seems to work really well when hit there. The same can be said when they're broadside. I find that those legs, I follow up the legs, because that bird, especially if he's strutting, is very deceiving. Mostly it's feathers and air around them.
Right, so right.
You've really got to pick a spot and know where you're going to shoot them. So you've got to be careful. You can't just, you know, wing an arrow at their puffed out body. You're going to shoot them through the brisket or breast and come away with nothing but feathers. And you just really have to know that turkey's anatomy and pay attention and wait for that ethical shot. You know, that's the good thing about a shotgun. You know, you put it right there on their head and touch it off. He's usually going to be taking a dirt nap. So
Tom Nelson, host of the American Archer, joining us here on Wild Michigan, being brought to you by Conquest Sense. Tom, real quickly, I want to talk about depth perception from a blind, because look, it looks like it's really far away when you're inside the blind. You get out and like, oh my God, that was like 10 feet.
Yeah, it is, for sure. It's deceiving and such. And that's why I think it's important, even when, you know, a lot of us carry rangefinders when we're bow hunting in the fall and such, but turkey hunting is another. I still carry a rangefinder. I want to know how far everything actually is. You know, usually, you know, your decoy. Okay, I set my decoy out there 5-8 yards, or, you know, everybody sets it different. I like them close. But, you know, when that bird's out there, if you haven't hunted there before, if you're there for the first time, you might not know how far that range is. And as you stated, it looks oftentimes farther than they really are. Objects do, such as trees, turkeys, rocks. So it's important to know the distance you're shooting. It can make a crucial difference. You know, you're off just by a little bit, can make the difference between a good shot and a dead turkey with a tag on it versus a missed turkey running through the woods to hunt another day.
Absolutely. You know, and don't think that shotguns are always easy, because I had one, Tom. It was maybe 15 yards, maybe 10. I put the shot on. The bird went down. I thought everything was great. Then it got up and, like, kind of took off low across the hay field. And I literally had to chase it, like, three times. And finally, it took a nosedive, and I grabbed it and, you know, and sent him on his way by carrying him back. But I took a beating, I'll say that. But definitely know you.
I like that. They will flap you down, for sure. But you're right. Even with a gun, don't, you know, be ready for a second shot. And you got to think about, geez, how wide is that pattern, you know, the area of that shotgun, of the shot. At 10 yards and stuff, you know, when you're shooting close, it can be, depending on the gun, pretty doggone small.
Yeah, it is. And again, that was worth every swat that I took, because that ended up being my triple bearded bird. Any bird is a trophy. I don't care what it is when you're turkey hunting, because look, we've always said, if they could smell us, we'd never get them. And thank goodness that they can't.
True statement.
But I'm looking forward to getting out towards the end of April. I think the 26th, I want to say, don't quote me on that, will be the opening day for turkey season here in Michigan. Of course, Tom Nelson is going to be out there, he and Beth out there with their bows, and we'll be looking forward to seeing that, Tom. And also, real quickly, I want to remind everybody that coming up on the 26th of this month, I'll be in Mount Pleasant for the Commemorative Bucks of Michigan fundraiser and banquet. I will be your MC. Very few tickets remain for that event, and this is going to be their biggest and best ever. Looking forward to seeing you out there. Looking forward to seeing you at Not Just Guns, Cedar Street at 127 in Mason. Also, make sure to check out our friends at Conquest Sense as well. Tom Nelson, thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Always my pleasure, Durant.
Absolutely. Absolutely. More coming your way. Check us out on the podcast. Find the links to the Tick Terminator and all of our friends here on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Awesome.